SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, on this Monday, and it's the home and home visits with Jay Peribman. And not only did Jay set up the Eclipse finalist storylines going into this visit today, he also put you on to Mijos for Jimmy Jerkins and Centennial, the Mucho Macho Man, and really raised those question marks, Jay, about Coliseum going into the sham. And we just got off with Jerry Hollendorfer. Good morning, happy new year again.
And happy new year again to you, and congratulations on your Eagles yesterday. Never in doubt, right?
Never in doubt, like the Pirates. There was no doubt about it. Absolutely. You can stand in. Are you going to stand in for Johnny D? Because, you know, I got no Johnny here today. So
no, I'm not going to stand in for Johnny D. I'm sorry, you and Johnny can't revel in your Eagles victory from yesterday together. That's too bad. Sorry, Johnny couldn't answer the bell.
He
must have been too emotionally drained after the game yesterday.
There's no doubt, and ideally, we'll be able to revel one more time, at least maybe three more, ideally. But
I should really revel. You should go to the game. Couldn't be in a better, more fun place to go.
I'd love to go, and it's funny because Chad Chexnader down in New Orleans, you know, right away said, you know, why don't you come down? And I would have even considered going to Chicago, but being the 4:30 game on Sunday makes it hard because I couldn't have gotten back from Chicago last night. You know, I've wanted for years to get Tina to Chicago, and she's never been. But same thing here in New Orleans. The transportation issue is not the greatest back and forth.
Well, I mean, a man of your means should be able to hire a private plane right now.
I don't know. Not so easy. Unless somebody, maybe the Bensons would send. Maybe they would send for me. Maybe no, I don't think that's happening.
I'm sure top of their list would be the owners of the Saints would be to fly a fan of the Eagles down.
Well, but I'm also. I'm a big promoter.
I think you should call Gail Benson and see if that'll work. Tell her you're a big Tom Ditt hot fan, and by the way, can you have two tickets to the game?
Exactly. I'll watch. Tina and I have a whole bunch of rituals actually that we've gone through for watching Eagle games. So we'll just keep going forward. You, of course, had the stream tuned in on Saturday, 11 o'clock, and Gabby Gaudette and Jason Blewett laid out the finalists, Jay. You wrote the story, but flesh it out for us.
Well, I mean, obviously the real interesting thing, I think, this year is the horse of the year debate. I think when the Belmont was over, it was pretty much acknowledged that Justify would be horse of the year. And I think as the year has gone on and Justify never ran again and Accelerate continued to rack up big wins, there's been a legitimate debate over, you know, what horse of the year entails. And so it'll be interesting to see which way the voters come down. My gut feeling is that it's going to be about 65% to 35% Justify over Accelerate, but there's a healthy amount of support for Accelerate. And I think if people took the time to really evaluate both horses instead of just knee-jerkingly reacting one way or the other, then that's a healthy thing to do, because I think too many times a lot of these awards, and I'll go through a couple of my pet peeves this year, are done without as much digging as people need to do. And I think in the case of Accelerate and Justify, it's a little bit easier because they're right in front of you, but I think in some of the other categories, and my biggest pet peeve came with Breeder. I just don't know that people are really doing some of the homework that needs to be done. But so that'll be interesting. And, you know, then there's a couple of other ones that are kind of for older female on grass. Is it going to be Enable offer one start in this country, beating the boys in an incredible performance in the Breeders' Cup turf and with her European resume behind her, including her second straight arc, or Sister Charlie, who had a completely American campaign, won a Breeders' Cup race, and won four grade ones during the course of the year. You know, I like to support horses who ran in this country and compiled strong records, and to me, the only time really to look at a an alternative is maybe in the case this year where you had in the male turf category where nobody really stood out. There was only one two-time grade one winner, and that was Heart to Heart. The second grade one came very early in the year, and the rest of his year was a disappointment. And so you've got a much more wide-open field, I think, in that category. And I thought it was very interesting that Stormy Liberal, who I think has a legitimate chance to win that category, is a finalist, and he's a finalist in two categories, also for male dirt sprinter, where his stablemate Roy H is favored and will win for the second straight year off of his Breeders' Cup win. And then Marley's Freedom was the other horse who was a two-time finalist in an individual category. Obviously, Monomoy Girl, Justify, and Accelerator, two-time finalist, but I'm carving out Horse of the Year for this portion of the discussion. You know, Marley's Freedom's a finalist for female sprinter, where she is up against Shamrock Rose, her beater, in their only head-to-head meeting in the Filly and Mare Sprint. And then she's also a finalist for older female on dirt, which is another category where nobody really ended up standing out because Abel Tasman, who had a couple of brilliant performances the middle part of the year and one ugly one to start her season and two ugly ones to end her season, is a finalist, along with Unique Bella, who I think a lot of voters have circled back to, just because even though her career ended midway through the year, she still had a strong record in terms of accomplishments, and I think benefited really by not having to run. And some of the others who did run, just running so awfully at the end of the year. And so when you look at the totality of what the body of work is for those candidates, I think Unique Bella became a very appealing alternative for voters.
Jerry Hollendorfer was just on, and I brought it up with him, and he said he, in fact, he notably perked up regarding Unique Bella potentially winning another trophy, and he said he heard from a lot of voters that he thinks went in her direction. You and I discussed it a little bit last week, but I was really ambivalent about the older fillies and mares. To sound off on a couple of the topics that you alluded to, Jay, the breeding situation and the owner to some extent, they really are feeling problematic here year after year. And I don't know, is there a discussion to be had about a committee approach to these kinds of categories?
I mean, the breeder once was chosen by a committee, right, and there was the thought that was becoming too exclusive, that it was a little bit myopic in terms of who people were voting for. But I wonder now, again, if people, as I was alluding to earlier, if people do as much digging. But look, there were a couple of finalists who, if you breed, in the case of Mike Abraham, who bred Accelerate, or in the case of John Gunther, who bred an unbeaten Triple Crown winner, I get that they're finalists for champion breeder. But you know, Windstar Farm, who led the nation in purse earnings, I have a question for you. They had 215 individual starters, horses that they bred this past year, and they made collectively more than 1,100 starts. You know how many grade ones they won? Of the horses that they bred, we're not
that they bred.
That they bred. How many Grade One winners they had?
I don't think they had any.
That would be correct. Whereas, for instance, Jane Lyon of Summerwind Equine, who has maybe 20 mares, had six total grade one wins among offspring that she bred. Those six collectively were won by Game Winner, who's going to be, if not a unanimous choice, should be a unanimous choice for two-year-old male, Mackenzie, and her homebred Chasing Yesterday. That's six grade one wins from a small operation. You know how many people won more grade one wins than she did last year as a breeder?
As a breeder, I mean, maybe, well, Gunther's got to be, Gunther.
Here, I'll answer it for you. Nobody. Six was top, and she's not a finalist. So that's an example to me of how, I don't know that voters did enough digging on something like that. Because to me, as we've discussed over the years when I've been on your show, what I like to do when I'm filling out my ballot is after I decide who I'm voting for among the horses in the individual categories, I do a spreadsheet where I list the trainer, jockey, owner, and breeder of said horses and see if there's any commonality. And so, for instance, I ended up voting for Joel Rosario for jockey, and he didn't even make the top three because he was on three of the horses that I voted for as individual champions, respectively Game Winner, Jaywalk, and Accelerate. Now, granted, he picked up Accelerate when Victor Espinoza got hurt, but he did nothing wrong the last three starts of that horse's year. He's going to be on three individual champions. His grade one wins stack up with the Ortiz brothers or Javier Castellano. So to me, you know, or Mike Smith. So to me, he was a deserving finalist, if not even a potential champion, and he didn't make the top three. It's the top three of the two Ortiz brothers plus Mike Smith, who rode the Triple Crown winner. And the Triple Crown, or the Accelerate and Justify Tentacles went to, you know, the owners of both horses are finalists, and the breeders of both horses are finalists. So there's some consistency there. But there were a couple spots where I just thought people maybe didn't do as much digging as they should have. And, you know, another owner who I think didn't get as much love as they should have is our Rockingham and David Burnson, who had two Breeders' Cup winners in Roy H. and Stormy Liberal. Roy H. is going to win male sprinter, and I think Stormy Liberal has a very good chance of winning male turf. And if that is the case, and if you voted that way, to not list them at least in your top three, to me, is an oversight.
I completely agree. And on the breeding front, my three were John Gunther, Jane Lyon, and Fred Hertrick and John Fielding, who year after year seemed to get ignored. I you would think after showing up repeatedly and constantly that you know it would take root at some point. You know, the ownership, the Team Justify thing is, I don't know, it's a little awkward. Again, Seth Klarman, year after year, it seems to get a short shrift, despite being, you know, as important as anybody. I'll give you one I thought, Jay, that was...
But let me ask you this, going back, and I know Seth Klarman has a lot of support, and I respect that he's got a ton of horses, he had a great Saratoga and all that, but other than potentially Newspaper of Record, who's probably going to finish second to Jaywalk, he's not going to have a divisional champion. So it depends on how you approach the vote.
Right.
If you approach the voting from, I'm going to reward owners of horses who are Horse of the Year finalists or divisional champions, he doesn't quite measure up when compared to the owner, like Ronis Brothers with Accelerate, or the
right.
Justify owners, or, you know, or someone else, and, you know, be maybe even the connections of Monomoy Girl. So I get that Seth Klarman should be a finalist most years, you know, and he's had great success. You know, this year specifically, you know, there seems to be a lot of gnashing of teeth from a lot of people in New York over it, and I respect what the guy's accomplished, but I think if you know, I can see ways where he doesn't quite make the cut, in my mind, for this specific year.
Well, and there were a couple of areas where, for instance, in the 3-year-olds, I mean, I happen to have voted for Good Magic with Justify and McKinsey, but I certainly get Catholic Boy being a finalist, and I'm sure when the numbers come out, probably edged out Good Magic for probably the fourth.
Right.
There's always, and these are short strokes. I mean, in the trainer area, I'm sure by Steve Asmussen's own admission, this was not a banner year. How does Brad Cox not be a? How is he not?
How does John Sadler not get there?
Sadler too. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be Chad Brown, and if not him, it's going to be Bob Baffert. So at least I think, they're two of the three finalists. I think the voters are going to get the winner right. And like you were saying, with Good Magic, I don't get as worked up over that in a category where it's a slam dunk. To me, Breeder, to me, I get more exercised over because I think Jane Lyons, she didn't even finish in the top three, and I think you could make a legitimate case for her to be the champion, for Summerwin to be the champion of that division, and she's not even a finalist. So those are the ones that I get more exercised over.
I hear you. I completely agree. The others are, a lot of it, because this is an area where there are no set instructions. And so, some of it is the way the voters more or less see the world. I mean, see the industry. And so, you're not going to, as you say, gnash teeth necessarily over over some of these areas, and particularly when it comes to the horses. There's years, Jay, where I have voted for the one start runner in North America, that had come over. When it's a Goldakova, I feel more compelled, enable to me and Expert Eye particularly, I just didn't feel were worth elevating above the domestic players.
Well, to me, Enable would have been a choice I easily could have made had there not been a horse with the resume of Sister Charlie. So when you've got, to me, the years where the one-start Europeans have a good shot at it is when there's no real standout. And that's why I think Expert Eye probably got a lot more support than he normally would have this year because that's such an inscrutable division, and he ended up a finalist in there. But because there's no real standout, and one of the really ironic things I think about that specific category is that if Catapult had held off Expert Eye, he would have been the male champion, male turf champion.
Yep.
He would have. If you look at he's not even a finalist. So I mean, that Expert Eye is probably going to deny Catapult a championship. And if Catapult's a champion, does that make John Sadler more of a slam dunk trainer finalist? Because he's got now two potential champions. So it's just, it was just the way it flopped on Breeders' Cup Day. But that's why I think Expert Eye got a lot more support this year, is just because that specific division, just nobody distinguished themselves, at least going two turns.
You bring up Catapult, and I suppose that another corollary, who didn't come as close Breeders' Cup Day, but Catalina Cruiser. Think about if Catalina Cruiser had to run an A race in the mile. There's another one.
He would have finished second to his stablemate for older horse.
Yep, it's amazing.
Happened. But he wasn't winning. He wasn't beating Accelerate.
No.
But he would have added another Breeders' Cup win for Ronis Brothers and another Grade One for Ronis Brothers.
And on the owner front, I did vote for Ronis Racing as the owner, and I think it's be interesting actually between him and between the Ronis Brothers and I suppose Team Justify, I guess. Well.
I mean, if Ronis wins, I think the sport would be rewarding people extremely deserving of acclamation.
Yep, I agree, and I'm all for that, and also for recognizing as many. I like spreading it around. I do love your approach, which you've characterized over the years, and it's a very makes a lot of sense the way you do it and go about it. So. Rosario was on my ballot too with the Ortizes. I was surprised that that he wasn't among the finalists. We get our answers. What, in 2.5 weeks, right? 24th.
On January 24th, all will be revealed.
Meanwhile, Jay, you had a busy weekend. In addition to Saturday morning breaking out of the gate, then the racing unfolded, and between watching the works and preparations for Pegasus runners like Accelerate and City of Light and a host of others, then came particularly the three-year-olds. Little recapping of the weekend, and the Victor Espinoza story also deserves plenty of attention.
Yeah, no, it was a busy day Saturday for sure. A lot of very news. I'll sort of go in chronological order through the day. Accelerate work shortly after 6:30, right after the first renovation break, that's the pattern John Sadler's had with him. Saturday morning, first renovation break. That was the schedule leading up to the Breeders' Cup Classic. That worked out just fine. He worked with Sadler's assistant, Juan Leyva, the former jockey, who's now his assistant trainer. And he worked, I thought, very strongly again. He's a horse who's just continued to get better and better. He was kind of an indifferent workhorse. And he's definitely, as his races have improved, so have his works. And from what I saw Saturday, he's certainly holding his Breeders' Cup Classic form, if not better than he was. And City of Light's always been just a brilliant workhorse. And he's continuing to train well, too, out of his dirt mile win. And I think they're the two best horses coming into that race. They're both training at Santa Anita. They'll both ship to Florida for the Pegasus. But I mean, of what I've seen of their performances over the past year and the way they've been doing, I think they're the two top horses for the Pegasus in less than 3 weeks now. Both will have two more works prior to the Pegasus. Both of Accelerates will be at Santa Anita. City of Light's next one will definitely be at Santa Anita. Michael McCarthy told me that he's going to contemplate things this week. He's thinking of taking City of Light to Gulfstream early and giving him his final work there, but he hasn't decided on that. If he doesn't do that, he'll have both of his works at Santa Anita before he ships. Yeah, it was great to see Victor back on the track Saturday morning. You know, it's been nearly 6 months now since that horrible accident at Del Mar when he was badly injured, and it's taken him a long time to get back to health. It was really slow going for him initially, but he's made great progress in the last couple of months, and he was really happy, obviously, to be back on horses. And he told me that, you know, obviously the doctors had to approve him to ride again. If they weren't going to do it, if they thought there was going to be an issue, and the MRI was satisfactory for him to continue to ride. And he said he wants to ride, and one of the reasons he does, and I've heard this from other riders who had it taken away from them, not on their terms, like right. Sinkai and Delahousse, it gnaws at them that they couldn't just walk away when they wanted to. It's an unsatisfactory feeling. And he said that's one of the things that he wants to do, because obviously he's accomplished everything he has, or he can, with a Triple Crown win and three Derby wins. He's been very smart about his investments over the years, so it's not like he needs to come back and make money. He just loves what he does, and he doesn't want it to end on the terms that it might have ended with the Bobby Abu Dhabi situation last summer. If the doctor said you can't ride again, obviously he's not going to ride. But given the green light, he wants to come back and go out on his terms. So that's a lot of his motivation. And it'll be great to get him back. I mean, he's got a great attitude, and I think he's done a lot for the sport, trying to promote it over the last few years, starting with the American Pharoah year and all the extraneous stuff that he did. But he was trying to promote the sport, and I think that's commendable. And then, as you mentioned, the races we had the Sham Stakes. I thought it was just an average race, honestly. It was fast early, slow late. Gunmetal Gray rallied, made the last run, and won. Coliseum, some of the issues that we discussed on the show Friday, came back and reared their ugly head. He's just a work in progress, and he's a very headstrong horse in his workouts, and he was being asked a lot on Saturday. I was shocked that he was such a prohibitive favorite. I mean, here he had one sprint. He was running against horses with much more experience, and he was a horse who is known to pull hard, is now going to be asked to go two turns for the first time against winners. It was a big ask, and not that he couldn't have done it, but taking 3-5 on a horse to pull that off was the wisest investment. He's going to need time to get his head on right. He's got talent, but he's just his own worst enemy right now.
Come back for I'll swing back for a minute, Jay, and then we'll work our way back forward. McKenzie, the half mile, which looked fine. Any feel for how much closer that team is toward a Pegasus run?
Yeah, I think we'll be more on that later this week when we see how he's progressing. I mean, one of the things with McKenzie is we saw after the Pennsylvania Derby, which involved a ship and it was off a long layoff, but he's a very light-framed horse, and I think one of the concerns with him is running him back too quickly at times might not be in the best interest for him. So I think one of the things that they're trying to monitor is just how is he doing since the Malibu, and is he holding his weight, and is he training strongly? And I think those are things that are going to be better known when he gets towards the end of this week, and he has his second work back, and it would be the second of potentially three if he were to run in the Pegasus. So it's still, by my understanding, open for debate as of Monday morning as to where they're at with him for that specific race.
All right, I just wanted to touch, and then fast forwarding to the Sham, and the race came back a little slow on the scale, on the buyer scale, especially in light of the performance yesterday by Bella Fina, that was eye popping. Jay, you always have got a great feel for this. I mean, I haven't read your recap yet from Saturday, the expanded comments, but what do you think with this group? They're going to have to take steps forward, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think so, Steve. I mean, an 82 buyer speed figure is just not going to cut it. But, Gunmetal Gray was running on at the end of the race, so that's in his favor. But just the whole race overall kind of left me cold. Like I said a little bit ago, it was fast early. The opening half was 46.95. It was slow late. The last half was 52.01. So the race shape certainly set up for a horse with Gunmetal Gray's style. And he made the last run and got up and won. He acts like he can handle more distance. Mike Smith is convinced he can handle more distance. But as we saw, it was two prior starts at that point in time, he was certainly no match for Game Winner, let alone any other horses that have progressed over the last couple of months. So he needs to move forward off of that. But I mean, he's obviously a very useful horse. He's the kind of horse that's going to pick up checks wherever he runs. And he was fifth in the Breeders' Cup, and I thought he kind of ran in spots that day. I wrote in my juvenile recap, I just thought he was running and then sort of idling and then running, and I even suggested that I wondered if they might put blinkers on him at some point down the line, which they haven't, and perhaps and obviously Sherry Altdorfer knows a lot more about training than I do, but he just ran to me like a horse who might in that race have needed blinkers. I thought in the race Saturday he didn't run in spots. He just sort of ground out a victory, and I think he's the kind of horse that you can run every month, and I think you'll see him again most likely in the Robert Lewis. One thing, West Point Thoroughbreds has a really nice cowbred three-year-old out here named Galilean, who he's ready to run an open company, but there's a cowbred stake next month that he would be eligible for that's worth more money than the Robert Lewis. So I would think that Gunmetal Gray would run in the Robert Lewis and Galilean in the Cal Cup Derby. And then there's still plenty of time. If Galilean's good enough to be a Kentucky Derby prospect, there's still time for him to have two more races before the Kentucky Derby, and those races are the ones that matter the most anyway because of the point values. I don't think you need to panic regarding points right now. So if you can get another easy potential race into them before taking on the bigger boys, I can see where it would play out that way. But if they decide to run Galloway in the Robert Lewis, for instance, then, you know, then maybe Gunmetal Gray goes on the road to the LeCompte or something in at Fairgrounds. So those are, I think, some of the things that'll be weighed. But again, it's only 48 hours since Gunmetal Gray's win, and there's plenty of time for them to come up with a decision because the next potential race for either of those horses is not for another 3.5 weeks.
Jay, jump across to Florida, too. Don Little Jr. is going to join us here in about 20-25 minutes from Centennial to talk about Mijos and very in a kind of a similar storyline. Code of Honor, not a satisfying three-year-old debut, and Mijos stepped forward, and he was the one that you had, you know, real interest in seeing, you know, what he might be, and that was certainly a good way to start his sophomore campaign.
Yeah, it just seemed like with his two prior races at 6 furlongs that the extra distance was going to be something that should benefit him, and that was that's what I wanted to see. Was it going to? Because he needed to take a step forward fig-wise. His figs in his first two races were very moderate. They were in the low 80s, and so he was going to need to move forward from that, but I was thinking that the extra distance would probably be a benefit to him, but that's what I wanted to see. And as it turned out, he did take that step forward, so that was encouraging. The Code of Honor's race was poor. Velasquez looked like he was out of horse midway on the far turn. He was already scrubbing on him pretty good, and there just wasn't much response there. So his champagne was terrific when he ran on behind Complexity, but he's just had a series of issues since then, missing the Breeders' Cup when he was ill, and he looked like he was going to be one of the top two or three choices up in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And then he had a series of works at Payson leading into this race, but he just didn't fire. So hopefully they can regroup with him, because his first couple races were certainly indicative of a horse who might be a top-notch Derby prospect, but his race the other day was not indicative of that. He needs to be better, and hopefully he will be.
Well, those that were watching, Jimmy Jerkins powered through the post-race conversation. Jimmy had a tooth yanked, and it had like a... Tina said, is Jimmy chewing tobacco? he had a huge lump on the... And this morning he said, Steve, I sent him a note. He said, I just can't. He said, I my jaw is awful. So, and let's face it, Jimmy's not from the talkative trainer crowd.
Well, the pulling teeth metaphor, I thought,
what
was
a bump.
Kind of interesting when it comes to Jimmy. It's funny because when Jimmy's focused on like an interview,
yeah,
he's great. I mean, he's very insightful and all that. But sometimes when he's training in the morning, and I get it, I just leave him alone because he's training his horses. He wants to be left alone. So I've been around enough guys over the years. I mean, Neil Drysdale's that way. Between like 6:30 and 9:30, unless he comes up to you and wants to engage in a conversation, you let him be, and we talk when he's done training. There's other guys who, you know, want to shoot the BS with you, you know, all morning long, the pulling teeth thing was, when you mentioned that about his tooth, I was like, oh, it's interesting.
Nice. Well, the next focus, the LeCompte, as you mentioned, on the 19th, the week from Saturday, the Cal Derby. No points involved, but some horses will prep for the El Camino Real and so forth. Well, Smarty Jones gets going at Oaklawn in 2.5-3 weeks. So
yeah,
the train is pulled out of the station, Jay.
Well, and that program at Oaklawn is terrific. I mean, there's races every few weeks. It's a nice progression. The money's terrific, and that's why you see more and more people either based there or shipping in there for those races. It's, you know, they have 12 up and up fields for all those races because it's such a terrific program.
Yeah, and actually, once we get in, yeah, now that we're into this week, the start of that season, really, right up on the dashboard. Well, Jay, this was really fun, and I appreciate, and I'm sure Johnny appreciates you stepping into the key 10 o'clock slot.
Well, congratulations on your Eagles. They might be the charm team this year. The way they got in and the way they won yesterday, that was pretty fortunate.
As I said at the beginning of the show, given my age and my association with this team, which is 50 years long, it's a complete form reversal from franchise history,
and
it's refreshing, to be honest.
It's fun. I went through the same thing with the Kings. Because they were so bad for so long, and then they won two Stanley Cups, and now the regression of the mean is reoccurring. But it was fun while it lasted.
Go Kings, go, Jay. I don't know. Are we going to get together Friday? Is there a reason?
No. It's a pretty soft week, so I think. Please, I bequeath my slot to someone more deserving of weekend previewing.
All right. Well, the absolute yeoman work Friday and today. The Eclipse Award, if you haven't seen the details, and Jay's expanded finalist piece, check it out at DRF.com, America's Turf Authority since 1894. Jay, thanks a lot. We'll talk soon.
All right, good luck this weekend with your Eagles.
I appreciate it. Jay Pribman, folks, DRF Pribman. 90 minutes plus in, 90 to come, and Ben Colebrook. Let's talk to Ben about this undefeated filly. For those of you that don't realize, there's an undefeated three-year-old filly. Her name's Fancy Dress Party. The Munnings filly was on the money. We'll talk to Ben, and we'll get... we'll get also an update on Limousine Liberal. See what his early season plans are. And see what else is going on in the Colebrook barn. And then Don Little Jr. Looking forward to talking to the Centennial Farm Chief. Always nice when the cream and scarlet. I like that. Right? The jacket description. Famed cream jacket with the scarlet sash, Centennial Farm. Steady. There's always a horse coming up. And then Rocketry, too. I don't let me forget about Rocketry with Don. Back after this, though, Ben Colebrook next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit DRF.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? And maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights. And catch the summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm a troublemaker.
Yourself a dream. How's it looking? Speaking of happy man, Ben Colebrook, whenever I see him, he's always smiling, but I see you mostly, Ben, when you've just won a stake, so maybe that's why. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. This was a filly that you warned everybody about last fall or late summer, whenever we talked. I think it probably tied into a limousine liberal conversation, and you had some expectations, and boy, is she delivering.
Yeah, she's really, you know, kind of lived up to all, you know, the hype that we had before her, and even more so. I mean, she just kind of does everything so easy. You know, just kind of each race, she's won by a bigger margin, and kind of this last race was just, it was just so easy for her. You know, finally getting her on a fast track. Maybe she is better on a fast track than a sloppy track after watching that race.
Well, and that, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because that was the interesting part of the equation for those that maybe wanted to try to go against her. She went off at a dime under even money. And, you know, when you look at a race like this, and to be honest, there really, you know, there was only, I guess, Midtown Rose, I suppose, Saffy Joseph's filly. There wasn't a glaring major threat to her, but you know, if you wanted to go against her, you say to yourself, "Well, let's see how she is on a dry fast." Then you got your answer. I mean, this was just as good as the open length victories at Keeneland and Churchill on the wet.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I mean, I think surface is kind of irrelevant for her at this stage. I mean, she's been at three different racetracks now, and I mean, she's been to Tampa where she trains. She trains great there on the dirt there. You know, initially I thought she was probably, you know, maybe would be better on turf. It's kind of why I entered her in a maiden turf race to get her started. So, you know, not to say down the road, you know, maybe we would try her on the grass, but I mean, at this point we're dirt only with her now. Just, it'd be silly to put her on the grass when she's done so well on the dirt now.
She also, it's notable, has run for three different riders. So it's not as if she's, you know, she's problematic or you know, not to say that Leperu, Giroux, and Luis Saez, you know, that there was something, you know, that you had to worry about. But I mean, the fact that you've legged up three different riders and she's performed for all of them, that says something about her.
For sure. She's so classy. I mean, she does everything. Like, you know, from day one, the first day I got her, she's never, you know, made a bad move. She, you know, first time we took her to the gate, she was good. You know, first time we schooled her in the paddock, she was great. You know, I mean, everything you throw at her, she just handles. And, you know, her mind is probably a huge asset, is in addition to her
obviously, you know, she has a lot of ability, but, you know, sometimes horses with a lot of ability, you know, if they don't have that mental aspect of it, you know, it can kind of catch up to them. With her, you know, I don't have to worry about that. She makes my job very easy.
Hey, take us back, the fancy dress party, and I mentioned earlier today when I was going through some of the results, a big weekend for the Roths. L&J Foxwoods, the title sponsor of the TCA function yesterday, and they've been such a great benefactor in the aftercare world, and you know, they've really only been in the game 5-6 years or so, and they've had as much success as really any emergent participant. $280,000 Munnings purchase as a Keeneland yearling, and the breeding is interesting because that mare, the Schwagen, by Maddie G, has been productive, and she's been particularly productive. She's been going to Munnings repeatedly, and people might remember from 2-3 years behind Will Munnings, the full brother, nice gelding that is a stake winner.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, that was, you know, part of the reason how I got, you know, kind of introduced to the Roth and got this filly is I was at the September sale with the Balls, you know, the owners of Limousine Liberal, and we were scouting fillies, and she was on our list, and we really liked her. But we had already kind of bought a few fillies, including Into Trouble, and we're kind of out of we were out of money. So when Jason and Alex had got on her too, I knew Jason, but I didn't know Alex yet, and we had a common friend, George Hills, that I was with at Kentucky Downs, and I just mentioned to him because I knew he did some business with Jason and Alex and the Ross. So I said to him, just, hey, they bought a really nice filly yesterday. And, you know, I said, you know, I thought she was one of the better fillies in the sale. And George says, well, just call Alex or text Alex and say you like the filly. You might get her to train. And, you know, that's not usually my style, but I went ahead and did it. And Alex was, you know, very nice, and, you know, down the road, when the filly was done with her pre-training at Windstar, he called me and said, hey, that filly's, you know, she's gotten to be really big. She's, you know, we just want to take our time with her, but if you're still interested, we could send her your way. And I was, you know, super excited to get her, so it all worked out.
That's a great story. And I'll tell you, Ben, that, I got to say, for young horsemen listening, there's a real lesson here. When you've got a notion like that, and, you know, a lot of times people will sit back and they'll see a horse go to someone else, and, you know, they'll know that, you know, that they were right about a horse. And of course, the Solis Lit is the Alex and Jason in question here. And reaching out like that and being aggressive. And, you know, we talked plenty of times about the challenges of the business itself, and you know, not everybody is, you know, naturally adept and comfortable with every aspect of what you have to do to be successful these days. And you know, being able to reach out and solicit business and try, you know, at least you tried. And in this case, you may end up, you know, with a, obviously it's an important client, and who knows where it goes.
Yeah, for sure. I think in this business, a lot of times relationships, and, you know, things like that are so important, you know, because it is, you know, it is a very competitive business for sure. And, you know, that when I was first starting out, that might've been, you know, it's something you have to kind of work at, because that's not probably one of the things I was initially really good at. You know, I'd been an assistant trainer,
sure,
and, you know, been around horses my whole life. Horses were, I don't want to say the easy part, but I did know horses pretty much inside and out. But I didn't, you know, when your name's on the program, you got to get out there and get clients and solicit owners and, you know, be at the races and kind of, I guess, smooge a little bit. That's something you have to, I think you work your way into, I guess you have to say.
Absolutely. And, you know, you wouldn't be successful if you didn't have self-confidence, have not just the self-confidence about training the horses, but in your own ability, and knowing that people are seeing that translate into success on the racetrack, and certainly that's been the case. What's the upside here for this filly? And this was a listed stake. Where do we go from here with Fancy Dress Party?
You know, we're in no hurry. I mean, the Forward Gal comes up next at Gulfstream, and to be honest, I think we're going to, I talked to Alex and Jason and L&J last night, and, I think we're just going to kind of wait. I don't think we're going to, do that. It's a long year, a lot of big races down the road, and she acts like she could be any kind of filly, and I don't think, some of the races are 7 furlongs that, the main big races for, and I think she'd get that distance. That's not the worry. I just think we need to kind of, she got a little bit of a late start to her two-year-old year because of how big she was. We raced her in October, we raced her in November, and now early January. You're kind of getting into the body of your three-year-old year here shortly. So I just don't want to overdo it with her before, kind of the more prestigious races come along.
Absolutely. And plus, the fact that you're at Tampa, you can really poach. You can go to Gulfstream. You could, pick and choose. And, there are probably some, particularly if you're going to, my sense is that you're going to keep her short, right? I mean, she's bred up and down short.
Yeah, for sure. Right now, we're going to keep her short. We're not, we have the Oaks is not on our radar.
No.
We're just going to keep her. Obviously down the road, races, the test and the La Brea and those things, middle to the end of the year. And, Raven Run, Keeneland has races for her. So,
sure.
We don't want to get in a big hurry with her because she's done everything right. And we'll just take it easy with her for, a few weeks after this and, let her train at Tampa, which she seems to really blossom down there. Like I said, she is such a big filly that, we'll just let her mature and take us where we'll let her tell us where we go.
Well, speaking as well of three-year-old fillies beyond Fancy Dress Party, how about that maiden winner the other day at Tampa, Frond? She won by open length, 7 furlongs too, which can be tricky. It was, again, a wet track, but this is what looks to be a nice little sprinter. Got a 64 buyer and feels like she might be on her way to being useful.
Yeah, she might be one we'd kick around the idea of jumping into Stakes Company in the Forward Gal. We'll have a look at it with her because the race, there's a stake at Tampa that I'll run into trouble in, the Gasparilla, and that probably comes back in 2 weeks, which it'll be a little too soon for Franz. So at this point, hopefully we can kind of keep them all separate right now. Because as of now, they all look like one-turn three-year-old fillies. So, hopefully we can kind of keep them separate for at least, into the spring.
Well, and give us a little bit about her. First out, and paid $20 too. $22. This is Mrs. Willis. What's the backstory? It's a homebred.
Well, yeah. Dr. Catherine Willis was. She was always with Christoph when I was there. So Arno, Christoph, and I all trained for her. And she's a homebred. She's a breeder, primarily that doesn't do anything but breed and race her own, sells a few at the sales. And she was one that Catherine, called me about last year, and she was at Timbertown with the Sweezies being broken, and she said, go out and look at her. And at the time, she was a big filly, but hadn't really kind of put it all together yet. But I liked her, and I love you. Yes, it's true. So I said, Catherine, let's just, no hurry with her. I could probably take her. I could bring her in the fall and, probably wouldn't get a race into her before we left for Tampa, but we could get her started at Tampa. And Catherine agreed. She's very patient and a really good owner because horses always come first. So we got her down to Tampa, and she just really, really started to blossom, has put on, weight in all the right places and really strengthened up. And her last 2 to 3 breezes before that race, she really kind of showed her hand that she could be a very nice filly. So, we went into the race pretty excited about her, but I was a little bit worried about the 7 furlongs first time out. If it had been a 6 furlong race, I would have been pretty confident, but she did it with ease, like you said, and I mean, it was a visually probably more impressive race than even the margin showed. I mean, she sat back, and I think, first call, she probably was 7-8 lengths behind the speed. She just circled the field 4 wide around the turn and just never looked really from then on like she was ever in any danger. So I think she could be a nice filly down the road. And, she just seems to really be going the right direction right now.
Well, you talked about Into Trouble as well, and we'll get to her in a second. Let's tie into the Eclipse Award nominations, or the finalists anyway, and get an update on K-Nix Go, because he is a finalist. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And the KRA on making the 2-year-old male finals.
Thank you. He's at Tampa. He got a little bit of a break after the Jockey Club. We just took him, I wasn't even training him, just getting turned out in the round pin and going easy. He's back galloping now. He's not had a breeze. But we'll try to bring him back to the Sam F. Davis. And if he runs well there, then, Tampa Bay Derby. And then from then, go back to Keeneland, either, Bluegrass or Lexington, something like that. If,
nice.
Everything goes according to plan.
Do you have a, now that it's well in the rearview mirror, do you have a kind of a postscript, what kind of a scenario you expect with him? I mean, I'm sure that the frustration out of the Jockey Club, do you regret going there, I suppose, is a fair question.
Yeah, for sure. No, that was it was kind of one of those things. We knew it was probably, I don't want to say not the right decision, but there was a bit of a risk to it because he was, had just run 2 back-to-back big races end of the year. He's kind of, you wonder, horses at the end of the year. I mean, is one more race too many? And then the sloppy track, he never really looked to get on track there. Alvin said, he was kind of pulling more in the race than he normally does. It was like he was trying to run away from the track a little bit. So, we'll just kind of draw a line through that one. That was my fault for trying him back. I mean, if the race hadn't have been at Churchill in our own backyard, I think we would have, we wouldn't have shipped him to go anywhere, to go
sure.
to a big race like that. But, I think the lure of it being right there and it being a Derby Point race, kind of maybe we kind of got a little blood rush to the head trying to, get those Derby points, those valuable Derby points, because if he'd have won that race, I mean, he almost, almost probably would have got him enough where you're on the cusp of already being in, so.
Yeah.
The one thing about him is he's run kind of subpar races before, and then he's come right back and run a good race. So, we know why he didn't run good, and we gave him the time to kind of let him catch up, and he's really done well. I mean, he's put on weight and muscle, and I think he's, you always wonder with precocious 2-year-olds how the transition from 2 to 3. But to me, he looks like he's going to make that transition right now. I mean, we won't know until we run him, but he certainly seems to me like he has improved with the time, and we'll just take him to that race at Tampa, and hopefully we see the next go that we saw at Keeneland and the first time we ran him at Churchill.
Excellent. All right. Well, let me get a question in about Limousine Liberal and where we who's got to be. Is he an 7 or 8?
He's seven.
Yep. Well, was there a birthday party? Was the because
yeah, oh yeah, it? Yeah, we celebrated for sure. He's at Keeneland and he just started back training. He gets he kind of is like a, I mean, it's exactly the same every year. So I mean, he's kind of one that he kind of just dictates. He could probably train himself at this point. So he's back training and we'll try to bring him back the same way we do normally, is just running him at Keeneland and then taking him to Churchill. And now that race that he's won the last 2 years is a great one. So we'll just follow the same kind of playbook as we've been following with him. It's worked for us. I think that's what we'll do with him.
Do you think you maybe avoid something like the Met this time around and keep him between six and seven?
I think this year I will keep him primarily at seven. I think I'll avoid the 6 furlong races.
Okay.
This year, not knowing, I don't want to say we're going to the Met Mile now, but I think the Met Mile would be certainly something we'd look at. The two horses that beat us in it last year are obviously no longer around. So, I mean, obviously there'll be some heavy head new shooters, but I think the Mile's within his scope. And in hindsight, you know, I think as he's gotten older, I mean, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, City of Light kind of freaked in the Dirt Mile, but, you know, looking back on it, we might have, you know, fared better in the Dirt Mile than we did in the Sprint. I think he's just gotten a tendency to let that speed get away from him and tries to make that big closing run where I think, you know, 7 furlongs is perfect, but 6 at his age now might just be a bit too sharp for him, even though he did run a bang-up race at Keeneland. Going 6 before, you know, and that was what kind of made us think, you know, maybe he still does have it at 6. But I think, you know, and now he'll have another year. He'll be another year older. I think, you know, I don't have a problem of keeping him at 7 and a mile this year at all. I mean, I think he's seasoned, and he's the one thing about him, you know, he's going to run his race regardless of the distance. He's going to go out there and try as hard as he can and give you everything he's got. So, no, I mean, I think we definitely look at all the one-turn mile, 7-furlong races throughout the year.
Well, the sprint division, a lot of the heavy heads, they're pretty much all the geldings. I mean, they're all going to be back mixing it up again. And
yeah, he's got it'll be fun.
Absolutely. He's got a ton of fans. So, nice, Limousine Liberal. And you talked about Into Trouble and got to at least get an update. Did she work this morning?
No, she didn't work this morning. She's going to work tomorrow morning.
Okay, because you were on a 7-day. I know you worked New Year's Eve and Christmas Eve. So,
She'll work tomorrow morning, and that'll probably be her last big work before the race. And, like, just blow her out before that race at Tampa. She's really seems like she's another one. I mean, Tampa kind of sound like a broken record, but seems like horses in general do really well there, and she's another one that has kind of flourished down there. I think, you know, the Alcibiades was kind of a head-scratcher, but, you know, she might not really want the two turns, and it was kind of a weird set of circumstances. The night before, we had a big rainstorm, and the barns on Rice Road flooded, and, you know, her stall was, you know, basically full of water all night. And, you know, she's kind of one of those fillies that whenever you go check on her, she's always laying down. So, you know, I might have just thrown her off her game there. And we're shorting her back up to one turn. And I think this race at Tampa is a perfect race to bring her back in and hopefully get to see the old Into Trouble that, you know, broke her maiden impressively and won the Lassie. I mean, she's certainly working that way, that, you know, she's back and ready, and she's always been a filly that I've, you know, had high regards for.
Well, we'll watch and look forward to getting her back, and got to also at least say thank you for a number of listeners, Ben, because anybody that was tuned in, this must have been either an August or September conversation, and everybody had their opportunity to write down the name Heels and cash for $87 because you made it very clear she had talent and that she hadn't put it all together yet. And then there it was in mid-November, 42-1, and Bob's your uncle. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll run her in A Other Than at Tampa. I entered her MTO in one yesterday, a turf race that was MTO two turns. We did a little after, you know, she had a few subpar races there. We did a myectomy on her, and that seemed to help her turn the corner. And I think she is probably a, you know, two-turn filly. And that would be a little bit evident when we ran her that stake at Tampa. She just got out-footed early. Came with a bit of a run late, but I think her future will be around two turns. So that'll be we'll get her back to try to a two-turn allowance race at Tampa and go from there. But I think once she's going two turns, hopefully we'll see her progress into a filly that could, you know, maybe compete and hopefully get some black type down the road.
Well, certainly those that jumped aboard, they can better a few more times before
money in their pocket
before they get to the break even point. Finally, give us a heads up on Friday. Lodestar back at Tampa, Deck Cannon aboard.
Yeah, I think that horse. You know, we tried him on the grass just because I did have a 2-turn dirt race for him, and Malibu Moons can go either way, and you know, he's a horse that, you know, has had some physical issues, so we were thinking the grass might be a little bit easier on him. But after we ran him on the grass, he didn't embarrass himself by any means, but you could see he just doesn't have that turn of foot that you need for the grass. You know, he's showed good speed in his works, and I think he's just that kind of dirt. You know, he probably is a 2-turn dirt horse, but 7 furlongs I think ought to be fine for him. I think he's got enough pace for that, and I think it's a good spot for him. I'm excited about running him in there. I think he's going to be a nice. I don't know if he's, you know, what the level is, but I think he's going to be a very. Seems to me like he's a hard knocking horse that's going to go out there and, you know, just, you know, pick up checks every time and be kind of a workmanlike horse to me.
What was the delay that kept him from racing earlier?
You know, I wasn't training him then, but for the story I got, he had suspensory issues that they kept just nothing major, but just kept niggling at him. And the owners are very good people and all about the horse, and they just gave him, you know, if the vet said they needed, 90 days, they gave him 6 months, you know. So it was, I'm hopeful that they'll be rewarded with their patience with him now that he's an older horse, and seems to be that the physical issues are behind him now, so hopefully they will they can make hay now that he's a 5-year-old and now that he's, you know, sound and happy.
You know, and I particularly wanted to ask because it just so happens that people may not remember the dam, Georgie's Angel, but she won the Schuylerville at Saratoga, and you know, the opening, the long running opening day feature, and so her name kind of jumped off the page at me when I saw, you know, when I saw Lodestar.
Yeah, for sure, and she has a actually she's coming. I just got a text from J.R. Harris, who has the filly in Ocala. She has a 3-year-old filly that I'll get now that was formerly with Brad Cox named Take Charge Angel that ran real impressive first time out. I think she was even a TDN Rising Star. And then they ran her back in the Rags to Riches, and she didn't run that good. And then since then, I'm going to be training her from here on out. But she's going to be coming back to Tampa, I believe, Thursday.
Nice, so nice. Take charge. Yeah,
so hopefully she'll be another one that, you know, at one point in time, you know, I think they had really, really high hopes for her after that maiden. I mean, I remember watching the race. It was very impressive, and I think they bet her down to favoritism, Rags to Riches, and it just didn't look like she, I don't know, didn't look like she fared that well that day, and it still, you know, I don't know if they know why yet, but anyway, we just decided to give her some time and send her to Ocala. And she's been down with J.R. Harris swimming and training with him. So he's confident and says she's doing well. She had some feet issues when she first came to me. So he's changed the shoeing on her, and I think we've got that remedied. So hopefully she'll be another filly with a bright future.
Well, and she's actually got there's actually a yearling by Frosted that's been named Frosted Angel. is the next one. That's a filly, and I can't tell about the new 2-year-old because there's conflicting information. One says it says 2017 Dead Foal, and then there's also a name for 2017 Redemption by Super Saber. So we'll try to figure out about the siblings. Well, Ben, clearly going to be a terrific year, and the undefeated Fancy Dress Party, a cute name for the Roths, Ellen J. Foxwoods, and so much more. Best of luck, Limousine Liberal, and all the nice horses, the nice clients. Hope it's a great year for the team.
Thank you, Steve. Let's hope so.
every expectation. We'll talk to Ben Colebrook plenty this year. And take a lesson, young trainers, and pick up that phone. Don't be shy. Don't be shy. he taught you something here. Go ahead and reach out to those prospective clients, and you may find a Jamie Roth in your grab bag. You never know.
Yep.
I
good
love
lesson.
It. Exactly. Yeah. Ben Colebrook, folks. And you can follow Ben on Twitter. Are you tweeting enough to be followed?
I mean, I need to probably get more active. My wife's supposed to help me out in that regard. My social media, I guess I'm on that cusp where I'm not quite I'm not old, but I'm not young and hip enough to be a big Twitter guy. So I need to follow the footsteps of my old boss Christoph Clement, because he seems quite the Twitter to handle.
He couldn't tweet. That's all. What's her name? That's all the daughter.
Right? No, I think he has a team. I think there's like a
social team.
Ritlin that works for him, and Miguel probably, and Charlotte. Yeah, he's got, and probably Valerie too, his wife. So he's got a. He's definitely ahead of me in the Twitter sphere, I'd say.
All right. Well, Colebrook Racing, for those of you that want to follow Ben and thank him. Send him a bottle for heels, that $87 winner. Ben, always great. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Have a nice day.
Not at all.
Happy New Year.
Happy, healthy. Ben Colebrook, let's take a break. Top of the hour. And when we come back, we've got a visit with Don Little Jr. And have not talked to Don for too long. Centennial Farm, of course. And Mijos looks like he's going to take them where they go on a regular basis. And that's the Triple Crown Trail. Don Little Jr. next.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Sirius XM.